Iran and the remaining JCPOA signatories are set to hold talks in Vienna. Tehran is warning the other side that a window of opportunity will not remain open indefinitely. Saudi warplanes launched several airstrikes on the international airport in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, the second such a strike in just a few days. Plus, the World Health Organization warning the overall global risk related to the newly detected COVID variant, Omicron, is very high. Hi everyone from Tehran. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Now, top story of this hour, with talks in Vienna to revive the 2015 nuclear deal just hours away, Iran calling in the opposite side to make the most of the occasion, warning that a window of opportunity won't remain open indefinitely.
The new Iranian administration has taken part in the negotiations with genuine determination, good faith, and with fruitful discussions in mind. The other side must seize on this window of opportunity, because this is not a window of opportunity that will remain open forever.
Khatibzadeh says negotiations will run smoother if the U.S. comes to Vienna to resolve the deadlock and outstanding issues from the previous rounds. However, he warned that if the U.S. insists on continuing its unilateral measures, Iran will have a, quote, multitude of options available. The spokesman said that Iran is trying to practically verify the U.S. implementation of its commitments under the nuclear deal and the U.N. Security Council resolution endorsing it. He also pointed to a joint statement by the U.K. and Israeli foreign ministers promising cooperation against Iran's nuclear program. Khatibzadeh said that Israel has always been hostile to the nuclear deal, and some European states are not coming to Vienna with necessary resolve to remove the sanctions and do not want the effective implementation of the nuclear deal. Now let's go to Vienna, where the talks will be resumed. Homa Lesgi, our correspondent, is there for us. Homa, so you're preparing for this. I know you will have busy hours ahead of you. Tell us about the atmosphere there and what's going on.
Yes, sorry, I just didn't hear the end of your sentence there, but let me just give you an update of this.
Sure.
In Vienna, we are going to have, of course, as you mentioned there, a joint commission session today. We're hearing later this afternoon, but already ahead of the joint commission session, we've had a trilateral meeting being held between Iran, Russia, and China yesterday, and Ambassadors Oryanov calling it a useful discussion between the sides that help both Russia and China, he said, to have enough positions of this new Iranian negotiating team. And of course, Iran's team, that's led by Mr. Barfeli, the deputy foreign minister, has also said that they are coming into these talks to see if the West, in the words of Mr. Barfeli, the other side, specifically meaning the European countries, time ready for action and not mere words. Mr. Barghari published an op-ed just ahead of these talks. In that opinion, did make basically the positions, the clear-cut positions of the new negotiation clear, saying that the principles are based on verification and guarantee, meaning that Iran is looking for the full guarantee that removal the sanctions that have been imposed by the U.S. following, in his words, post-JCPOA, following the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And this seems to be one of the issues that, as we know, in the previous round caused lots of disagreement, both when it comes to what sanctions need to be the U.S. is willing to remove and when to remove them, how to remove them. These are some of the issues that, of course, what if wants all of them, including the additional ones imposed under the Trump administration and that are not related to the JCPOA to be removed. And Iran also wants them to be removed before it can take action. I think the comments by Mr. Barkhali was where he said that the mutual compliance basis is not a basis for meaning meaning that there was the suggestion earlier in the previous rounds of talks that both the Iranians and the Americans could steps to go back.
Well, we don't have a very good connection with our correspondent, Homa Lesgenvi, and we'll try to get back to it at a later time. International lawyer and activist Barry Grossman says that Israel and its Western allies have utterly failed in their objective of vilifying and hindering Iran's civilian nuclear program.
Israel and its partners in the wider axis of evil, that is the United States and France, have fallen very wide of the mark in achieving their overall objective and somehow convincing the international community and people around the world that Iran is somehow in violation of its international obligations and quietly beavering away at creating some kind of a nuclear weapons facility. That's simply false, and they've certainly done nothing that could be characterized as achieving a goal of stopping such developments or even stopping Iran's peaceful nuclear ambitions, while at the same time, Israel, of course, remains largely untouchable, with no one being willing to hold Israel accountable for the very large stockpile of nuclear and chemical weapons, which it's largely conceded by all involved it has, even if Israel itself chooses to remain silent about those matters.
Saudi Arabia's military aggression against Yemen causes more fatalities and destruction. One person is reported dead in the latest artillery shelling of Yemen's northern province of Sada. 10 others were wounded. According to local media, Saudi warplanes targeted Yemen's main international airport in the capital, Sana'a. Those incidents are the latest of such attacks this week by the Saudi-led coalition against different locations in Yemen. Since 2015, Yemen has been devastated by Saudi-led war that has resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people and the displacement of many more civilians. Time now for the news review program. Now, Palestinian factions and political groups have criticized the Israeli president's controversial visit to the Ibrahimi Mosque in the occupied West Bank. The Islamic Jihad movement says that the regime's arrogance is rooted in the normalization of ties with a number of Arab countries. It says the Palestinian Intifada will continue by all means and in all forms. The Hamas resistance movement says that the visit shows Israel's tendency to far-right ideologies. The Palestinian Liberation Organization has also reacted to the incident. It says that the visit is a move backed by the U.S. to plunder the rights of the Palestinian people. Meantime, the Palestinian Authority has slammed the visit and said it was aimed at supporting the settlers in the occupied land. Isaac Herzog took part in a candlelight ceremony at the holy site on Sunday. Now, to learn more about that, I'll be joined by a couple of guests. We'll have Mona Kandil, our correspondent in Ramallah. Also, we'll be joined by Amal Watan, human rights and advocate and Palestinian activist also in Ramallah. Welcome to the show, ladies. Beginning with Mona, tell us more about the Palestinians' factions' reaction and also how the people feel about this. This should be a sacrilege of the holy sites in the eyes of the Palestinians, I suppose.
Well, that's right. All the Palestinians, whether it's the Palestinian Authority or the different political and Islamic factions, all had condemned the visit by the Israeli president, Ishaq Herzog, to the Ibrahimi Mosque, known by the Israelis as the Tomb or the Cave of Patriarchs. Hamas movement issued a statement saying that the move is a provocative provocation of the Palestinians' feelings. It's a blatant desecration of the sanctity of the mosque, the Ibrahimi Mosque. The Palestinian Authority as well condemned this visit and said it's a defiant move aimed at embracing a settlement project and a blatant violation of international law. The Israeli president, when he was there, he said he addressed the Israelis saying that, or insisting that Jews' connection to Al-Khalil, the occupied city of Al-Khalil, as well as the Ibrahimi Mosque, saying the Cave of Patriarchs is sacred and questionable. That's why the Palestinians believe that he's encouraging the settlers, giving them a green light to remain in that area, to continue attacking the Palestinians, especially that the residents of Al-Khalil continue to face numerous difficulties, numerous attacks, and different forms of violence by the Israeli settlers who are illegally living in the settlements inside the city of Al-Khalil, mainly the settlement of Kiryat Arba.
Okay, now let me ask Amal Awatan what she thinks about this and in what context she looks at this. Amal, you know, some people are calling this visit aimed at actually kind of Judaizing both the Muslim and Christian holy sites. When head of state is visiting, you know, the site, which is a controversial one, and he knows how Palestinians feel about it, I mean, what should we expect other Israelis and settlers to do?
Exactly. You know, it is an irony that the Zionist leaders are using theological basis for colonizing Palestine, while none of them said or do believe in God. This is really an irony. The visit of Herzog to the Islamic holy place of the Abraham and Moses, an intentional provocation of the Arab Muslims. And it's a move to change its identity so they can control it totally. It is really, as the Palestinian, the PLO said, it's an explicit and clear declaration of sponsoring settlers' plan in the city, a city of 200,000 compared to 1,000 settlers. This move encourages more settlers to go on with their settling in the city and totally controlling it. It is simply an action towards, well, I can say that Herzog himself officially declared a religious war and deceived the international public opinion about the real intentions of the Zionist apartheid regime to totally control and colonize all of Palestine. You mentioned the Christian sacred shrines. Of course, it is a target now in Jerusalem. It is targeted with the registration and settlement policy that the Israelis started since 2018. So they are in the process of controlling all these religious places in order to Israelize Jerusalem and Hebron in this case. The Ibrahimi Mosque is considered an Islamic heritage by the UNESCO, and thus could be protected by the international organization. So this step by Herzog is a formal support for the settlers' colonization of Hebron, and they're carrying the lives of Palestinians in the city into a continuous hell. They are occupying the houses of the Palestinians neighboring the Ibrahimi mosque. This is an unacceptable move, not by the president, but also by the Israeli soldiers, and the whole world should realize this. And it is not a coincidence that the accelerating of aggression by the Israeli occupation against Palestinians in Hebron, in Jerusalem, in other parts of the occupied territory, go hand in hand with the acceleration of the U.S. policy in different areas, like in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon. For example, the latest step by the Israeli government towards conducting agreements with the Moroccan, military and security agreements with the Moroccan king and government in great opposition of the Moroccan people who went into demonstrating. They used theology in Morocco as well, you know, when the Hassan there was calling to bless the Israeli soldiers when they are killing Palestinians and Arabs. So this is actually a whole-scale oppression
right.
At all parts of the occupied territories, and this is not acceptable. I think that more of such provocations will lead into another Palestinian intifada while it's going on mm-hmm. in different parts, but it is going to lead to a total intifada in the occupied territories.
Okay, appreciate insight and thoughts. Mona Kando, Amal Watan, human rights advocate and Palestinian activist, both of them in Ramallah. Moving on, the World Health Organization says the likelihood of the spread of the Omicron variant of COVID-19 at the global level is very high. The UN health body has called on its member states to accelerate the vaccination of the high priority groups and report initial cases and clusters of the new variant. It also urged a risk-based approach toward travel guidelines. Now, to prevent the spread of the Omicron variant, Japan has already reinstated tough border measures by banning the entry of all foreign visitors. The new and potentially more transmissible strain has been detected in a number of countries, including Britain, Switzerland, Germany, and Australia. The Omicron was initially identified in South Africa. Its severity has not been determined yet due to a lack of sufficient information. And that's a wrap for this news broadcast from Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Economic Divide.
The U.S. is experiencing record inflation, standing at a 30-year high. Americans are paying more for cars, for clothes, food, and energy. And this is while there are other economies around the world, like China and the U.K., who are also suffering from record inflation. Hi, I'm Kavitat Way. Stay tuned as we dive into the world of inflation, first in the U.S., then in other parts of the world. We're going to take a look at inflation rate in the U.S., 6.2% in October. It has risen compared to a year ago. That's the fastest annual increase in over 30 years. Americans are suffering as a result of that. Then we're going to take a look at possible reasons for inflation. Higher energy costs, maybe one, an increase of demand due to the post-COVID-19 period. Also, supply chain disruptions like the port crisis. Then we're going to take a look at the spread of inflation, which seems to be a global phenomenon. The impact is being felt around the world. Price increases on basic commodities has occurred. China, UK, and Germany, three countries that are suffering as a result. How bad are other parts of the world?
As the reopening continues, bottlenecks, hiring difficulties, and other constraints could again prove to be greater and longer lasting than anticipated, posing upside risks to inflation.
Inflation that has not been seen in decades. That is the case in the U.S., standing at a 30-year high. This means that Americans are paying more for things like cars, clothes, food, and energy.
Well, when you think about it, we threw $5.4 trillion at the economy. That was about 20 to 25% of GDP. And that's going to be largely reflected in a combination of increased real growth and an increased price level. So yes, the price of goods and services post-COVID will be higher than the price of goods and services pre-COVID.
And here are increases on some everyday products in the U.S. Notice that many of them are in food items.
Definitely regular grocery stores like Giant, Harris Teeter's. Most of the prices for meat and vegetables have gone up.
I think that the, particularly like the meats, they've been inching up over the last few months. Gas prices today are ridiculous.
Inflation has hit low-income households especially hard because they shell out a larger share of their modest incomes to cover the necessities.
Gas prices are outrageous. They're holding up all these boats on in the water, they say, not letting them come in the port. But people are suffering, especially people in middle class and low class, cannot afford to be paying gas prices of $4. Soon it'll be $4.
Some of the factors driving up the prices: higher energy and food prices, strong demand and supply chain disruptions following COVID-19, and a severe shortage of workers, which is driving up wages. Inflation is a serious problem that appears to be plaguing many parts of the world and in different sectors. Our first social media post points to the impact that inflation has had on the U.S. economy, and is from Edward Snowden. Now, he has said inflation hits 6.2%, wiping out the raises of those lucky enough to even have a good job. Parents who are worried about the price of milk for their kids when the shelves are not empty and the establishment is like this. And we go to another post which said Americans are, by many measures, this is from the New York Times, in a better financial position than they have been in many years. They also believe the economy is in terrible shape. Why? Well, let's see if we can get an answer to that question from that post. Vijay Varghese joins us. He's from Rogue News. com. He's a contributor to Independent Precious Metals Authority. Vijay, welcome. So we just looked at that media post from Snowden saying that parents are worried about giving their kids milk. But then you have this schism where some think that the U.S. economy is doing well, yet others don't. Why is there such a contradiction here, do you think?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, I think one of the things that people need to understand is this. In order to understand where inflation is, you got to go back a few years, right? You got to go back to 1971. You got to go back to the 1980s, where we stopped calculating GDP numbers accurately, right? We re-engineered the way gross domestic product is measured. When we did that, we became the first country in the world where we counted government expenditure as part of GDP growth. Okay, so for the longest time, I mean, we've been running ridiculous numbers, and we were able to maintain quote-unquote low inflation through accounting gymnastics, trickery in arithmetic, falsifying data. The day, you know, the list goes on and on.
Okay, that's Vijay there. Interesting how he said gymnastics is being played with the numbers. That was the case for the U.S., but what about the rest of the world? Well, here are some economies whose inflation has hit the news recently. This particular tweet says that the U.S. consumer prices have risen at the fastest pace in three decades. China factory gate inflation has hit 26-year high. UK inflation heading to its highest level in 10 years, and your neighbor still thinks that investing in Bitcoin is a bad idea. Well, that person has not taken a look at the Bitcoin numbers recently. Okay, in the UK, this tweet says inflation has hit 4.2%. That is the highest level in a decade and climbing. Paul Johnson of the Institute for Fiscal Studies has said, unless we get pay rises of 7%, the buying power of our earnings is going to be less this year than last year.
Yeah, I mean, this is the highest that inflation's been for almost exactly 10 years. And with the labor market strong, lots of people are moving into work, but earnings aren't rising this fast. Of course, we've got some big tax rises coming along in April. And all this is going to mean, I'm afraid, that unless we're getting, once you take account of the tax rise, unless we're getting pay rises of something like 7%, I'm afraid our the buying power of our earnings is going to be less this year than it was last.
Okay. Let's bring in Alice, Sasha Craner. He's the founder of Craner Analytics and a trading advisor to quantitative strategies at CTA, who joins us. All right, Sasha, welcome. So we're looking at major economies around the world who are experiencing inflation, just like the U.S. is. And you're looking at China, for example, whose inflation has risen at 1.5% annual rate last month, which is double from the 0.7% of the annual rate that it experienced in September. Why is inflation going around the world at the rate that it is? What's going on here?
Well, basically, you know, most of the world today, perhaps the whole world today, has adopted the same monetary system, which today is purely based on fiat currency and essentially unrestricted possibility for monetary authorities to engage in monetary expansion. So basically, you have an uncontrolled rise in debt, which in the Western world has now exceeded about 300% debt to GDP. The debt has become unpayable. In the West, an estimated 20% of all corporations are now zombies, which means that they cannot even service their the interest on their debts from their free cash flow. And increasing interest rates would essentially implode the system. All these corporate entities would probably collapse and go bankrupt. Most of the large global systemically important banks would also collapse. And so the policymakers' only option is to print money.
This is our Info News section, where we take a look at other economic news making headlines or to have gone unnoticed from around the world. Our first story takes us to India. Who said protests don't pay off? It seems like in this case, it has. The Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has repealed farm laws after a year of protests. The repeal of what's called the Black Laws was designed to modernize agricultural sector. Well, that's a huge victory for the farmers. But why did Modi back off and take back the laws? That's the key question. We're going to find out, I'm sure, about that. Now, let's go to chip shortage. That's our next topic. It's still affecting the world, and in particular, the car industry, which is not immune to it, and in particular in Europe. Car sales there have plunged to their lowest level on record for the month of October, a 29% drop. Now, the drop comes due to continuous semiconductor supply shortages, not to mention COVID-19, of course. Have to wait and see whether this is going to, be provided or manufactured, but there are problems with the chip shortage in the world. The UK inflation is our next topic. This week, our program is about inflation, so it's a good thing that we're bringing this in here. A surge in container shipping rates, in particular, will continue well into the year 2022. Now, this came from the UN, of all places. The UN has issued this warning. It says that freight costs will increase 11%. That's a 1.5% increase on consumer prices. So you can see that has translated from shipping costs to the consumer prices. And finally, the rich tax break. You're looking at a $285 billion tax cut for the rich that occurred under Trump. So it's a leftover from the previous U.S. administration. Now, at a time when inflation is hurting ordinary Americans and there is massive income inequality, taxes need to increase under 1%, not to give them huge tax breaks.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Our in-depth section is upon us, and we will look specifically at what is happening with inflation with a focus on the United States. First, let's define what inflation is. Well, in simple terms, inflation is a general increase in prices, and as a consequence, a fall in the purchasing value of the money or purchasing power. Then there is what's known as asset price inflation. Asset price inflation is when the price of assets rises and becomes inflated. Why would the prices become inflated? Well, low interest rates. When interest rates are low, investors cannot make easy returns using low-risk methods like government bonds or savings accounts. Well, in the last 18 months or so, we want to take a look at what the U.S. has done through the Federal Reserve. Well, it has pumped money. One source, and that's massive scale, has said $3 trillion. That's in 2020. And the American Central Bank obviously is the one responsible for that, and it did it to counter the economic impact of COVID-19. As a matter of fact, central banks have actually spent $834 million per hour for the past 18 months to save the global economy. Okay, whole lot of money there to save the global economy because of the pandemic. Well, it is economics 101 when it comes down to the money supply and when it expands. What happens as a result? It lowers the value of the currency. Now, when the currency declines, relative to the value of foreign currencies, the prices of imports rise. What happens then? Well, that increases prices when that happens in the general economy. So you can see the knock-on effects that were there. Well, at first, the Biden administration and the Federal Reserve downplayed the rising costs that were happening in the U.S., which led to inflation, record inflation. They argued that they were a temporary phenomenon driven by COVID-19's unprecedented impact on the global supply chain. They later backtracked on that.
We also know that as our economy has come roaring back, we've seen some price increases. Some folks have raised worries that this could be a sign of persistent inflation. But that's not our view. Our experts believe, and the data shows, that most of the price increases we've seen were expected and are expected to be temporary. Today's economic report showing unemployment continued to fall, but consumer prices remain too high. Tell us, the American people, in the midst of this economic crisis, the recovery is showing strong results, but not to them. They're still looking out there. Everything from a gallon of gas to a loaf of bread costs more.
Okay, you can see the differing views there as the time went by. Well, it's time to bring in a guest for this Q&A to see what he can tell us about inflation. Vijay Varghese from RogueNews.com rejoins us. He's a contributor, Independent Precious Metals Authority also. Okay, so what are we looking at here when it comes to the Biden administration saying that the rising costs, he downplayed it first, then he said that they have increased and have actually impacted and have remained longer in its duration. We're looking at the COVID-19, obviously, impact that this has had on the global supply chain, not to mention what is happening in the U.S., which has affected things like shelter, food, cars, among other things. What is going on?
Well, the whole thing is this. We're a country that makes nothing. Our biggest exports are trash and recyclables. And our real key export is the paper dollar. So in terms of a physical economy, we've been a country that has been gutting our physical economy for the last several decades. We, the leaders, the oligarchs of this country, sold the population on this idea of a service-based economy, or better known as a FIRE economy: finance, insurance, real estate. In other words, the Wall Street banks decided that it's much more profitable for them to have a purely speculative economy. So when a systemic shock like COVID-19 occurs, and it creates the type of supply chain issues, when it creates the type of capitalization issues, it's going to be catastrophic.
Well, let's see what he is saying is that the U.S. really is not going through a transitory period when it comes to inflation. It's something that's going to obviously, based on what he said, probably agree with that.
Well, I think that both the government and the Federal Reserve have to talk down inflation because they need to avoid the spectacle of people panic buying and bidding prices up because they're afraid of prices rising and they're afraid of shortages. But the reality is that the inflation will probably not be transitory. So this is just, let's call it what the Federal Reserve calls the moral suasion.
In January, we're expecting lots of referrals when the children return back to school for food parcels, emergency food parcels. So that number could increase again. I reckon it will increase drastically as the weeks go on.
You can imagine the sales of some items, I mean the cost of some items, as at 2 weeks ago, has increased with like 50% increase. We experienced that.
The Fed is doing what the Fed always does, which is basically taking the movement and looking to make sure they do not get entrenched in the system. And this is the reason why the market is anticipating Fed rate hikes coming shortly after the Fed is completed with its quantitative tapering.
I think the conditions for this interest lift off, which is of interest to your audience, are pretty well spelt out in this forward guidance, which clearly under the current analysis are not satisfied and certainly not in the near future.
It looks like inflation is plaguing many parts of the world. Maybe the rich can weather out this storm, but the disadvantage, they are going to have a hard time meeting their basic needs. We begin with the U.S., where inflation has reached 6.2%, a 30-year high. The disadvantage are suffering as a result. These are the findings based on a recently published report. Inflation will dampen the Christmas spirit for 10% of everyday people in the U.S. It's eating into recent wage increases. Struggling families spend a third of their earnings on essentials like food and energy. The timing couldn't be worse after federal pandemic relief in 5 million Americans. Germany, the Eurozone economic powerhouse, is also suffering from record inflation. Inflation has soared to its highest levels in 3 decades, and many Germans are angry as their lives have become more uncertain. Well, here she is herself, the ECB president, Madame Lagarde, talking about inflation at a press conference in Germany.
Let's look at inflation. Inflation increased to 3.4% in September. We expect it to rise further this year. But while the current phase of higher inflation will last longer than originally expected, we expect inflation to decline in the course of next year.
In the UK, however, where the country is facing record inflation, reaching a 10-year high, there is a case or two of denial among politicians in that country.
Growth up, jobs up, and debt down. Let there be no doubt, our plan is working.
We can squeeze in one more country to this segment, and that's Brazil, which is experiencing record food inflation. Brazilians are watching out for what they are eating since food inflation is ravaging the country, especially when it comes to essentials like meat. But maybe the following is what is worrying the US and maybe the rest of the world, and it's the situation in China. If China's economy keeps stumbling, it won't just take down Beijing, the whole world will collapse with it. Things like an energy crunch, the Chinese mega developer Evergrande's $300 billion potential debt default, and delays in factories shipping out products are some examples that are keeping many around the world awake at night. That does it for this segment of the program. Please send us any questions or comments. We do appreciate it.
We explained what happens when money is printed and then flooded into the system that creates inflation. Well, maybe time has run out for the U.S. to tame its inflation due to post-COVID turbulations. But as many experts have said, this debt will at some point catch up to the U.S. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. We do appreciate any comments or questions that you sent to us. From Mikove Tahwei and the entire team, it's goodbye until the next program.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Allah, Allah.
سيد عبد الله الموسوي.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. And welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We were looking at human rights from the scope and the understanding of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, and specifically we were looking at marriage. Now, we said that previously Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi would encourage the concept of marriage and encourages people to get married, and how he looks down and frowns upon the idea of being single, and how he himself, to begin with, he would make it easier for people to get married and to get all the necessary help that they require in trying to provide a family. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi moves on to the third step. So one, we encourage marriage, we provide for people to get married, we get them married. Then what? Then we have to encourage the continuation of marriage. So we spoke about the fact that we need to establish marriages and make it easier for people to get married. Now, we need to make sure that this constitution of marriage continues and lasts longer. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, the relationship itself, before it begins, a person has to make sure he chooses the right partner. Because if a person decides to choose the wrong partner, obviously such relationship will not last long. So whether it's a male or a female, if they want to get married, they have to choose their partners correctly. And Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, beginning with Amir al-Mu'mineen, they lay the foundation of what a good partner is. For example, Amir al-Mu'mineen, when he talks about women, he says, choose a woman who is wadood, walood, shakur, qanu'. Choose a woman who is nice and kind, that gives birth, that is grateful and thankful, and that is content. So these are just four traits Amir al-Mu'mineen says you need to find in a woman in order to make sure that the relationship continues. Then he says, in ahsana shakart, choose a woman that if you do good, she will do what? Be thankful and grateful. Wa in asa'a aghfarat, when a person commits a sin and does something wrong, she would forgive. Wa in dhakara Allah ta'ala a'anat, when he remembers Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, she will support him. Wa in nasiya dhakarat, and when he forgets, she reminds him. وَإِنْ خَرَجَ مِنْ عِنْدِهَا حَفَظَتْ, when he leaves the house, she protects him and protects his house and protects his dignity. وَإِنْ دَخَلَ عَلَيْهَا سُرَّتْ, and when he enters the house, should be happy. Now, these are the traits of women that a person should be looking for. Where, in fact, in modern day societies, we are looking for anything but these things. We're looking for a woman who is good looking, for a woman who has, I don't know, a certain type of body, certain type of hair, certain type of eye color. So we are more in tune with looks rather than anything else. If anyone marries a woman for her looks or marries a woman for her wealth, then the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam says he will not get nothing. He will get, her wealth will disappear, and sold her beauty. She was not going to remain beautiful forever. She gets older day by day. So what a person should look for, virtual traits that they make the person, the partner, happy, that when he's around his wife, he's happy, he's content. This will guarantee what? It will guarantee that the relationship itself will continue. So when a person wants to get married, that's the first stage. Second stage, in order for such marriage to continue, the Ahlul Bayt, beginning with Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, when they come to encourage the continuation of marriage, they begin with the fact that a person has to choose his partner wisely. Let's take a break, and then we continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah alayhi, now he encourages marriage as being the basic human right for any person. Then he encourages the continuation of marriage. So once a person gets married, he needs to continue that marriage. Third, Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah alayhi, as a stage after, he says, when you deal with woman, you have to deal with her in a kind of way. So in the same way that we said there are specific traits a woman needs to have, now a man also needs to give back in return. So if he gets a good wife, he gets a nice, loving, caring wife in the same way that Amir al-Mu'minin described, now he needs to give back. So first he starts talking to men, advising them to understand what has happened. He says, "Inna nisa'a indakum awana." Women, they've been given to you to help you out, to support you in this life. أَخَذْتُمُهُنَّ بِأَمَانَةِ اللَّهِ. You took them, obviously, with the word of Allah. You took them in the halal way. And then he says, وَاسْتَحْلَلْتُمْ فُرُوجُهُنَّ بِكَلِمَاتِ اللَّهِ. And they became only lawful to you to be intimate with through the words of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. فَلَكُمْ عَلَيْهِنَّ حَقْ. You have a right upon them. وَلَهُنَّ عَلَيْكُمْ حَقْ. And you have to remember, it's not just you have a right over her. She also have a right over you that you need to give. And Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah alayh, he goes on and on about the rights of women, obviously. Among the things that happens today that Amir al-Mu'minin touched upon is that men would take the dowry of the woman and never give it to her, even though it is her right. He says, "Min aqdar al-dunub habsu mahar al-mar." He says, the worst of sins is to hold on to the dowry of woman. It's her right. Why would you take it from her? What gives you the right to take her dowry or not to give it to her from the beginning? He says, "Waman sharata li imrati shartan falyafi bih." Whoever promises his wife a promise, let him do his promise. Let him, you know, pay what he said he will pay. فَأَنَّ الْمُسْلِمِينَ عَنْدِ شُرُوطِهِمْ. For the Muslims are bound by their promises. إِلَّا شَرْطُ حَرَامٍ. Except for a condition to make something haram halal. أَوْ أَحَلَّ حَرَامًا. Or that which makes that which is haram halal. Obviously, we can't have such promises between one another. But if a person promises to pay a woman her dowry, and he says, I'll give you so much, so-and-so as a dowry, that's a promise a man needs to keep, a man needs to stand for. Because some men would delay it, would never give it, and then divorce happens, and he still hasn't paid it. So Amir al-Mu'minin says, that's the worst of sins. Then, amongst the rights of the woman that Amir al-Mu'minin, salamullah alayhi, he says that you need to give her right of nafaqa, as we call from jurisprudential side of things. You need to give her sustenance. Having to provide for her food and shelter and clothes, those are her rights. Those are not a recommendation, not up to you whether you feel like it or not. Those need to be given to her on a daily basis. She needs to be living in a safer environment, a safe house. She needs to have the proper adequate clothes, and she needs to have the proper food as well. And obviously, even if we have to go further, more, it says has to be equal to the people of her time. Now, let's leave it up to here, inshallah, and we will continue in episodes to come. So until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salli ya Rabbi ala Taha al-Amin, rahmatin arsaltahu lil alamin, wa ala ahin nabiyyi ajma'in, fa bihim
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.